Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Why was the Uvalde, Texas shooter who killed 19 children and two teachers able to stay in the building for over an hour before he was killed by officers? At a press conference that just ended about 15 minutes ago, Steve McGraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, said 19 officers were on the scene. He said a commander made a decision not to enter the building because they thought the shooter barricaded himself in a classroom. He said they did not know it was an active shooter situation. He said with the benefit of hindsight, it was the wrong decision. He said, from what we know, there should have been an entry. When there is an active shooter, officers should enter the scene and keep shooting. Two children called 911 for help. One of those children was shot and killed, according to reports. So why does the official story and timeline keep changing? Why has it taken so long to release this information? And who will be held accountable? Today, we are joined by Jennifer Macia, news writer for The Trace, an independent newsroom dedicated to shining a light on the gun violence crisis in this country. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Gabriel Arana, editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer, a nonprofit newsroom known for its independent investigative reporting. Hi, Gabriel. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Well, I just want to start off with you, Jennifer. I mean, this is absolutely shocking. I just saw someone on MSNBC. I didn't catch his name, but he follows active shooting. He said this is the greatest failure in modern American history as it pertains to how law enforcement has dealt with an active shooting.
Look, you know, Columbine in 1999 is the reason that protocols were changed for active shootings. That was a shooting that had largely transpired by the time the cameras got there. The reason it played out on the news for so long was because police officers did not engage. So we saw kids jumping out of windows. And after that, it was kind of like a never again attitude. And then, of course, 9/11 happened. And there was a lot of, you know, national security money going to these police agencies. And active shooter training is one of the things that they focused on. And now you have this. I was reeling. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And part of it was the tone that was being employed. It was like, yeah, you know what? We messed up. Hindsight 2020. But what I'm hearing from a lot of people in Texas is that the attitude of police toward the community in Uvalde, this is just kind of a part of that.
What would you add, Gabriel? You are in Texas. And as Jennifer said, this official, Stephen McGraw, said Texas teaches the active shooter doctrine. As long as there is firing, you go to the scene, you fire, and you stop the shooter.
So this just shows how incompetent the police can be when information is scarce. Rather than storm the fort, the police waited for an hour outside for the Border Patrol to show up while parents were shouting, chanting, go in there. Again, to divert attention away from the shooter and the gun, gun supporters like to say this is an issue of school security. All we need is more police on campus and we won't have gun violence. But have you ever heard of a cop stopping a mass shooting? No, because it doesn't happen.
Well, and in this case, there were 19 officers on the scene.
Yes, 19 officers on the scene doing nothing and waiting for another agency, a federal agency, to show up. It's really, you know, especially given all of the lies that permeate the debate on guns and gun control. You know, we're indoctrinated into thinking that the police will always be there to intervene and save the day. And in this case, they sat around and did nothing.
And Jennifer, to Gabriel's point, grieving families were screaming outside of the school. The videos are harrowing to watch. And just one example, Anjali Rose Gomez, a mom who was frantically screaming at law enforcement to enter the school. Videos show parents screaming at police to do something as they waited outside the building. Many wanted to go in, but police held them back. Gomez told the Wall Street Journal that she was put in handcuffs for, quote, intervening in an active investigation. And once she was freed from those handcuffs, she jumped the school fence, ran inside, and ran out with her kids. She said, quote, the police were doing nothing. They were just standing outside the fence. They were not going in there or running anywhere. I mean, Jennifer, these videos are just horrific to watch. And to think that a mom jumped the fence, ran into the school and took her kids out. And she afterwards, she said, I feel so bad that I was only able to grab my kids.
You know, and she's not the only one. There were reports that people were getting tased and handcuffed, you know, and actually there was a man who gave a really moving interview on CNN about how he found out his daughter was among the dead. She was one of the people who called police. What he didn't mention and what was mentioned in subsequent news reports is that he was also briefly handcuffed. I mean, could you imagine your children are inside and the police are handcuffing you for trying to do what they're not doing? And this is part of the problem with, you know, dealing with a problem. We should be dealing with it at the source, which is vetting who gets guns. But what we're doing is we're outsourcing it to these police departments. And this is what happens. Not only are they not really equipped, but their own views about, you know, race and policing in the community end up coloring their response. So you have officers who are arresting parents for just doing what they wish you were doing. You should be going into the school. You have the guns, you have the armored cars, you have all the equipment that is being, you know, paid for with millions in taxpayer dollars.
Gabriel, the other situation here is when these shootings happen, in the case of this one, we're talking about an AR. According to reports, the shooter had 1,057 rounds, 315 were fired into classrooms. Who wants to walk into that? And I keep thinking, when are police going to say this cannot be our job? We cannot walk into these active shooter situations. We need to get rid of these ARs.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Guns are America's blind spot. Unlike healthcare, they're not a complicated policy issue. It's maddeningly simple. Rather than rely on elaborate thought experiments, we can look at research that shows that guns make no one, not their owners, not their families, any safer. If you own a gun, you're more than twice as likely to die of gun violence. Again, we're not talking hypotheticals. This is research. Our public discourse about guns is polluted, and I see lie after lie after lie. And I don't expect the police to stop perpetuating those lies anytime soon.
Well, in the case of Uvalde, according to reports, the Uvalde Police Department has 60% of the municipal budget. They have a part-time SWAT team. One child told KITV that she has practiced lockdown drills since kindergarten. And yet, there were 19 officials on site and they did nothing. And this official this morning says, in hindsight, they should have entered the school classroom or entered the school at least.
Yeah, in hindsight, we should have stopped the shooter before he got to the school. But hindsight doesn't count when you're responding to an active shooter situation. Look, guns are maddeningly simple. If you don't have guns, you don't have gun violence. Scotland banned guns in 1997, and there's no massive shootout between criminals and the population afterward. They just got rid of gun violence.
You brought up, Jennifer, the young girl's father who spoke on CNN. And I mean, this is an absolutely horrific story. An 11-year-old told Click to Houston that she smeared blood on herself in a classroom and went into survival mode. And when that dad, who was a medic, entered the school building, he saw this little girl that was smeared in blood and said, what happened? And she said, I smeared blood on myself and my friend died. And he said, who is your friend? And it turned out to be his daughter. That's how he found out that his daughter had been shot and killed.
That story will never cease to horrify me. And first of all, a deputy sheriff also lost his daughter. I mean, the people responding to this had kids in that school, that's a close-knit town for you. But the fact that she, you know, this is our future. I have a friend in Texas who just said, she has two boys, one of them is seven. She said, is this what I'm gonna have to teach my son? To smear blood on himself, to play dead if a shooter comes in? This is what she's looking forward to.
And the family of this 11-year-old who smeared blood on herself said on Tuesday night she had a panic attack. I mean, you can't even imagine what this little girl is going to endure in the years to come.
John Woodrow Cox of the Washington Post writes about this beautifully, the trauma that ripples out through generations. He interviewed children for his new book. 6 years, 7 years later, they still have intense guilt. They have panic attacks, PTSD. Their development is hindered by this gun violence. And more people are exposed to gun violence. You don't have to be shot to be traumatized by it. So what we have now are generations of children growing up like this as the norm.
To Jennifer's point, we in the media broadcast this trauma and all of these gruesome details, you know, giving the public a taste of trauma secondhand, and yet nothing happens. I mean, each of these details that I see that leaks out just makes me sick.
Well, and to add to even more to the trauma, I mean, the stories are absolutely heartbreaking. Joe Garcia, the husband of Irma Garcia, one of the teachers who was shot and killed, suffered a heart attack and died. According to reports, he went to the makeshift little grave site that is right outside of the school. He put flowers down for his wife and these students, and he went home and he had a heart attack and he died. They were high school sweethearts. They were married for 24 years and they leave behind four children. Jennifer, you don't even know what to say. I mean, it's just all so horrific.
It was like The Notebook. You couldn't live without her, except they were in their 40s. This should not be happening. You know, and I've actually heard stories from mass shooting survivors' families. They contemplate suicide. And actually, in the case of Sandy Hook, unfortunately, one grieving dad did take his life. And, you know, this is something that, I mean, getting shot is one thing. If you survive, you live with lifetime physical injuries. Just having a family member who's gone through this, losing a family member, it takes a real toll, and it takes a toll on society as well, financially, in terms of productivity. I mean, we're cutting off future generations, essentially, and hobbling them with combat stress.
In fact, one of the Sandy Hook moms was on NPR this week, and she did say, if I had a gun in the house, I probably would not be talking to you. I mean, Gabriel, that just brings up a whole other issue around how many suicides we're seeing in this country because people have such easy access to guns.
So this doesn't get talked about a lot, but most of the gun violence in the country are suicides. So guns are indeed a mental health issue, but not in the way that most people think. Does that mean everybody who commits suicide is insane? No, it means even ordinary people have emotional crises that make them act irrationally. You know, the loss of a child being one of them.
Gabriel Arana is editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer, a nonprofit newsroom known for its independent investigative reporting. Jennifer Macia is a news writer for The Trace, an independent newsroom dedicated to shining a light on the gun violence crisis in the United States. And this press conference just ended before we came on the air. Stephen McCraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, said 19 officers were on the scene. He said the commander in charge made a decision not to enter the building because they thought the shooter barricaded himself in a classroom. They didn't know it was an active shooter situation. Three students, children, called 911 for help. One of those children was shot and killed. Stephen McCraw said, with the benefit of hindsight, it was the wrong decision. From what we know, there should have been an entry. When there is an active shooter, officers should enter the scene and keep shooting. Gabriel, can you just give us a sense of, I mean, do you know, why is it taking so long to get this information? The shooting happened on Tuesday, and we're only learning this on Friday?
Yes, it's very obvious why it's taking so long, which is that the police, the governor, have something to hide, and all of the coverage that, you know, all of the new details that emerge are deeply embarrassing, both to the politicians in the state, as well as, you know, putting the lie, I mean, making it obvious, you know, that guns equal safer societies is not true.
Jennifer, what would you add?
Yeah, I thought it was really strange that Governor Abbott is the one who broke the news about the fatality count. He was out in front, you know, on this, actually delivering news, new information. Usually, at least in New York, we've had several mass shootings recently, and the governor comes out to give a comment and offer support and talk about solutions. She doesn't break news about the shooting. So what Gabriel is saying is right on.
Well, if you have any questions or comments about what is taking place, why this information is coming out so slowly, I mean, we just got it in the last 45 minutes. And what are your thoughts about media coverage of the epidemic of gun violence in this country, from suicides to school massacres? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. A couple other facts here just to share, because so much is going on. Yesterday, March for Our Lives, Mom Demand, so many student groups took to the streets across the country. They walked out of schools to demand basic gun control. I mean, at this point, you know, it's hard to even pass universal background checks, because the majority of the Republican Party and a few Democrats opposed this bill. Yesterday, Senate Republicans blocked the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act, which would have opened debate on gun reform measures. You know, can we just please be real about this? You know, I keep hearing gridlock in D.C., that D.C. is broken, that nothing can get done on this. I mean, the fact of the matter is, we've got the records of politicians. We've got NRA funding lists. Yes, it used to go to Democrats. Now the NRA only goes, money goes to Republicans. Mitt Romney is at the top of the list with $13 million. Republicans oppose a basic universal background check bill. Last time this came up for a vote, a handful of Democrats voted no. This time, Joe Manchin says he will not get rid of the filibuster. Gabriel, can you just talk about how this is being framed in the media and how it should be framed?
So there are ways that we can put a dent in gun violence. But to really fix the problem, we need to get rid of guns. And the system is broken. And the gun debate shows why. You know, it's... gun violence isn't like abortion or healthcare. There isn't a big public debate, you know, even though the media may make it look like there's a big public debate over gun violence and gun control. Super majorities of the public support passing gun regulations. But with Republicans in the pocket of the gun lobby, we can't pass the legislation we need. When sensible laws do get passed, the Supreme Court is lying in wait to strike them down. So we'll continue to suffer tragedies like this until we get rid of the filibuster and change the Supreme Court.
Well, exactly. And we are waiting for a very important Supreme Court decision next month on an open carry case in New York. And we're going to cover that as soon as it comes down. I mean, it's going to be now any week now. Jennifer, what about you? What are your thoughts about how the media frame this issue and how they should frame it, given that there's a history there?
I did notice a change in tone in the media after Sandy Hook. And, you know, the Trace launched in 2015. And when we launched, it was actually a political statement to say, hey, gun violence shouldn't be happening. It was seen as a partisan statement. That has changed. That has changed with each horrific mass shooting, Pulse, Las Vegas. So I do notice that there is some pushback. But, you know, Republican senators represent like not a majority of this country. We have an electoral problem. Our electoral problem is broken because this is such a bipartisan consensus issue. There should be better gun laws. And our representatives are not acting on that. And part of the reason is they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to get primaried from the right. And it is also NRA money. Right. But, you know, it really at its heart is an electoral problem. And we see this with a number of issues in American life. But, you know, the pushback is nothing like, did you see the Sky News interview with Ted Cruz?
Thank you for bringing that up.
Is pushback.
Okay, yes. So we have that clip. Sky News reporter Mark Stone questioned Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who has accepted $442,000 from the gun lobby, according to Open Secrets. Now, when we play this clip, just listen to the questions that this British reporter asks and ask yourself why we don't see more of this from U.S. reporters. Here's the clip.
There are 19 sets of parents who are never going to get to kiss their child goodnight again.
Is this the moment to reform gun laws?
You know, it's easy to go to politics.
But it's important. It's at the heart of the issue.
I get that that's where the media likes to go.
No, it's not. It's where many of the people we've talked to here like to go.
The proposals from Democrats in the media, inevitably, when some violent psychopath murders people.
A violent psychopath who's able to get a weapon so easily. 18-year-old with two AR-15s.
If you want to stop violent crime, the proposals the Democrats have, none of them would have stopped this.
But why does this only happen in your country? I really think that's what many people around the world just, they cannot fathom. Why only in America? Why is this American exceptionalism so awful?
You know, I'm sorry you think American exceptionalism is awful.
I think this aspect of it.
You get your political agenda.
No, it's
God,
honestly,
God love you.
Senator, it's not. I just want to understand why you do not think that guns are the problem.
Why is this just an American problem?
Well, it is just an American problem, sir.
Mr. Cruz, why is America the only country that faces this kind of mass shooting?
But you can't answer that. You can't answer that, can you, sir? You can't answer that. Why is this
country? Why is it that people come from all over the world to America? Because it's the freest, most prosperous, safest country on earth.
It may be the freest. It may be the most popular.
Why are our kids dying in
That is Sky News reporter Mark Stone questioning Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who has accepted $442,000 from the gun lobby and says that the solution to this crisis is to ensure that every door in a school is locked and only one door is open at any given time with guards outside. You know, what's so... Gabriel, this clip has been shared over and over on social media because it is so rare for a reporter who has access to these politicians to ask questions like this. Why is that?
Because the media is trying to kowtow to what they think is the middle. And it shows the ways in which the American media is broken. I feel lucky to work at a publication, the Texas Observer, where we don't have to pretend to be objective. We can state the obvious. We don't have to pretend all sides have a valid point. Matter plus antimatter does not equal good journalism, I like to say. And so we don't hold politicians' feet to the fire the way our colleagues in Europe do, in part because they've already gotten guns under control and the answers are obvious.
Jennifer, what would you add?
I mean, it's refreshing to hear that foreign perspective because it is so simple. But, you know, guns have been used as a tool for white supremacy since the founding of our republic. That is the way they are entwined. So when you see, you know, white politicians hewing to Second Amendment rights, there is an undercurrent there that, you know, from even before we declared independence, you know, we white people kept people of color down. And that was one of the major tools. So it's all of a piece with what is going on in our country over the last 5 years, really.
We're going to take a quick break. Jennifer Masia is a news writer for The Trace. Gabriel Arana is editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer. Before we go to break, we want to play a clip from Fred Gutenberg, who lost his daughter, Jamie, on February 14th, 2018. She was shot and killed at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. 17 people were killed. 17 were injured. Here is Fred Gutenberg.
But for the next bunch of days and weeks, You have to get through this, this horror, because people failed. I'm done. They failed our kids again. Okay, I'm done. I've had it. You know, how many more times are we, and we're going to sit back? I'm going to listen to that governor of Texas talk about why he pushed to fight laws and for laws in Texas that made it easier for the guns to be had by those who want to kill? How many more times? I'm sorry. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. You know, but you know what? Tomorrow, I'm going to wake up. We're going to keep fighting, because as long as there's people like you and people like Senator Murphy, and, you know, I look on the House, they're trying to pass things. I look at a president who will sign legislation that makes it to his desk. This was predictable, but it was also preventable. Sadly, the next one that's going to happen is also predictable if we keep doing nothing. And so I am begging Senator Cruz, I sat with you in your office 2 years or so ago. I listened to your nonsense. I listened to your BS. I listened to you explain to me why you thought we didn't need the bare minimum of effective background checks. March into Senator Murphy's office right now, tonight, and you be the Republican who says, I've had enough. Because if you don't get your ass out of office, you don't belong there. I'm sorry.
Berg lost his daughter Jamie on February 14th, 2018, and that was him speaking to MSNBC right after we found out about the Uvalde shooting. We're going to take a quick break. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up next week, we are putting shows together about how easy it is to buy a gun in the United States. We are also going to talk about how to reach these young men. We'll talk about, and they have very, very different stories, the Uvalde shooter and the Buffalo shooter, and we're going to do two shows about both of them. We're going to talk to former white supremacists who have gotten out and are trying to reach the young shooter, like the Buffalo shooter. And then we're also going to talk about, you know, kids who are bullied, kids who have a tough home life. The problem is this happens in other countries, but they don't have access to guns. But this is where we are. And so we are going to talk about how to reach those young men. Before we get back to today's conversation, I want to play another clip. If we can play clip two, this is Manuel Oliver, who lost his son, Joaquin, at Stoneman Douglas High School. He says more than 250,000 people have been shot and killed since his innocent son was shot four times with an AR-15. Again, this is clip two, Manuel Oliver speaking with CBS News.
We've been fighting against this. We were trying to prevent this. We knew that it was going to happen. We just don't know where. We know that it will happen tomorrow again. We just don't know where. Governor Abbott knew this was going to happen, but that was not enough. We believe that more guns are the solution. You will hear these politicians sending their thoughts and prayers, and some of them will say, our hearts are with the families. Well, guess what? The families don't need your freaking hearts. They need their kids. And the kids are not there anymore. So I feel very angry, offended, and I just don't understand how come a whole society doesn't wake up after these news.
Manuel Oliver lost his son Joaquin at Stoneman Douglas High School. He was shot four times with an AR-15. Today, we are joined by Jennifer Macia, news writer for The Trace, an independent newsroom dedicated to shining a light on the gun violence crisis in this country. Gabriel Arana is editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer, a nonprofit newsroom known for its independent investigative reporting. You know, Gabriel, you were just talking about how this debate is framed, and it seems like every year things shift further to the right. I mean, for years you've had Democrats begin their speeches, and I remember Barack Obama did this all the time by saying, we're not going to take away your guns, but here's what we need to do. You just came out with an article, Everyday Gun Ownership Set the Stage for the Uvalde Massacre. The public discourse on firearms is so warped, even liberals fear stating the obvious. We need to ban them. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so rather than talking about every gun owner like they're Jesus and genuflecting before them, we should each imagine ourselves on the worst day of their lives, should that person have had a gun? Guns do nothing but endanger everybody around them. The person that you're most likely to harm or kill is yourself. A recent landmark study about gun ownership in California actually found they provide zero protection for their owners. Because unless you're sitting in your lazy boy waiting for an intruder with a loaded gun, there isn't any time to prepare for a duel when somebody has broken into your home at 2 a.m. We should have fewer thought experiments on guns and look at what the research says. Research shows guns don't protect anyone, not their owners, not their loved ones, not the public. If you own a gun, the person you're most likely to shoot is yourself.
And yet the questions that some reporters are asking officials is, why should an 18-year-old have access to an AR? Shouldn't the age requirement go up? I would like them to ask, why should anyone have an AR?
Yeah, absolutely nobody should have an AR. And if guns don't kill people and only people kill people, what were the police doing waiting outside the school for an hour? Guns do kill people. And here in Texas, rather than step toward sensible gun regulation, which, you know, ultimately I think the only sensible thing to do is to ban guns. But with our current limitations, all we can do is regulate them. But Governor Greg Abbott went in the opposite direction last year and signed a law that got rid of licensing and training requirements for anyone who wants to get a gun. That's why the shooter was able to get one so quickly after turning 18.
So can you tell us what the process is in Texas? If I lived in Texas and I, well, like this young man who just turned 18, what is required to get an AR?
Basically, nothing that isn't required to buy a packet of gun. You just have to go and present yourself and you can buy a gun and take it home that day.
You know, Jennifer, the editorial team over at Quartz ordered the same gun used in Uvalde. It's by a company called Daniel Defense. It's $1,870. I mean, this is really a frightening looking gun, especially if you're not around guns. And here's what the piece said. After Tuesday's shooting, we wondered how difficult it was to order a DDM 4V7, one of the two rifles the gunman bought a few days after turning 18. The answer, 5 clicks. The AR-15 weapon made by Daniel Defense sells online for $1,870 plus tax. Shipping to a local gun shop is free. After clicking place order, we received an email confirming the purchase, promising to send a tracking number once the gun was on its way to the pickup point. At no time were we asked for proof of age or a clean criminal record, both of which are legally required to buy a firearm. That will happen when we pick up the gun at a local licensed dealer. Now, you're going to join us on Tuesday to go more into detail about how easy it is to buy a gun. But 5 clicks is all it takes to buy this AR, which is a military-type killing machine?
Yes, I think Americans think a lot more goes into it, but that's about it. And let's talk about that background check once you get to the gun store. All it checks for is, have you been involuntarily committed to a psychiatric institution by a judge? And have you committed a felony that's punishable by more than a year, or a misdemeanor that's punishable by more than 2? That's it. So certain felons can own guns. You know, this is a moment in time. In other countries, you have to sit for interviews. The cops come and they ask your loved ones, is this person unstable? They look and see where you're going to store the gun. To imagine that, you know, in other countries, racist screeds online would be disqualifying factors. I can't imagine, you know, with our political realities, expanding background checks to include things that you would include for a job interview. And this is a deadly weapon. And these weapons with the ammunition, as we can see, they render bodies unidentifiable.
Well, that was the other horrific thing to learn, that these parents had to give their DNA to officials to find out if their child had been shot and killed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was, and they were asked right on the scene. They didn't even get confirmation. They said, look, we need a swab. That was very hard for certain journalists to even report.
Mm. Gabriel, going back to how easy it is to buy one of these ARs, on the NRA's website, they say that at this convention that kicked off this morning in Houston, which is about a four-hour drive from Uvalde, there are 14 acres of the latest and greatest weapons, which is about 14 football fields worth. And I just went online to check out what's going on there, and protesters are right now yelling at people going into this NRA convention. So this convention is still going to take place. Protesters were in front of the Houston City Hall yesterday asking the mayor to shut it down. And he said, we don't have the power to do that. They decided to have this convention 2 years ago, and we just don't have the power to do that. And as it stands, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are expected to speak there today. And Greg Abbott is not speaking in person, but he has recorded a video that will be played at this convention.
Guns, I like to say, make little people feel big. There's so much toxic masculinity in the gun debate, and gun owners have no shame, you know, as evidenced by the NRA holding their convention right after a mass shooting. I say, if you want to feel like a big, brave man, take a karate class, learn to shoot a bow and arrow. If you love hunting, play paintball.
Well, and what's amazing, but shouldn't be amazing because this should be the case, Jennifer, is that guns are not allowed in the NRA convention.
No, and you can't buy them off the convention floor. I mean, it really is an exhibitor's thing. But what's funny is you said protesters are heckling people going inside. Well, isn't that what happens at every abortion clinic in Texas, too?
Right.
You know, makes sense.
Well, today
if we regulated guns the way we regulated abortion, we'd be way further along than we were. I mean, think about it. Mandatory 40-hour waiting period, parental permission, a note from your doctor, having to watch a video about the effects of gun violence. You know, we can get a lot of good ideas from the way Republicans have you know, put a bounty on women who are trying to find reproductive health care.
Gosh, I mean, women are leaving the state of Texas to find reproductive health care now. Today, we are joined by Gabriel Arana, editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer. Jennifer Macia is a news writer with The Trace. We've got a number of people who've been waiting patiently, so let's go through a few callers, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Let's go to Peter in Florida. Hi, Peter. Thank you for holding.
Hi. You know, I was hoping you wouldn't click me on because what you're talking about, it's just I'm dumbstruck. I'm mesmerized. I can't even remember what I was thinking. There's just so much to think about. What did I say in my notes?
You know, I think you initially wanted to talk about the police.
The police are cowards. Let's call it. You know, how many hours did they wait? It's like, get in there. That's your job. Like, I mean, could you imagine your fire department showing up and not sure if it's dangerous? That's your job. You get a good salary to put yourself in the face of danger. Get out there. I mean, an active shooter? You know, yes, go in there and find out. And yes, you're going to be risk getting shot. Just like fire people, you know, they risk getting caught. They die. It's a very risky job. Well, and you get paid a good salary to take that risk on.
And so thank you, Peter. And that's why I asked earlier that these police are now on the front lines of these active shooters. They have to walk into ARs. It seems like they should be the first ones to say people should not have ARs in this country. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. You know, I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, until the politicians are forced to change the gun laws, there isn't going to be a change in these things happening. I mean, and I don't understand why your guests have already brought this up, why the Democrats aren't pushing to get rid of the filibuster and try and get national legislation. The other thing is, you know, I agree with this from the previous caller. The cops, you know, I think, you know, you're afraid of getting killed, a reasonable fear, okay? But like he said, that's your job. So you're going to wait till the kids get killed
because you're afraid to go in there and do something about it. You know, if you have encounters with the police, like I've had, there's a thuggish attitude on the part of a lot of them. I don't understand why that thuggish attitude didn't translate into this situation. And last, I just want to say this. I don't know if a background check would have stopped this, but I'm wondering if there's any way to go after these manufacturers of the guns. Mm. If they produce an AR-15, I mean, they shouldn't be able to produce an AR-15. And I'm wondering if there's any way, because I know that some of these companies have been sued by people where people have gotten killed. I have no idea if that would be helpful, but it's just an idea.
Well, thank you for that. I want to make sure I have my facts right on this. But a couple weeks ago, we talked about George W. Bush signing an NRA-backed Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. And this basically ensured that manufacturers would not be held responsible with a lawsuit. And people who work with the NRA said this is one of the best pieces of legislation they got in 20 years. This happened under George W. Bush. Sandy Hook, they finally were able to sue a manufacturer, and I'll find my facts. We were going to talk about this next week. Jennifer, do you have the facts on this?
Yeah.
Because they did have a settlement, and this was a big deal, but it is so incredibly rare.
Yeah, it's because they ended up suing under a state law, a marketing law, because the basis of their lawsuit was that this was negligent marketing. They should have been marketing this to people who were potentially disturbed, but also marketing a weapon of war to civilians. They were able to keep their claim under a state law in Connecticut that allows them to do that. The 2005 law is a federal immunity, and it also protects gun sellers as well.
Right. So that law is still on the books, and that's what happened under George W. Bush. You know, I have to say, I've been waiting for some of these George W. People who go on MSNBC every day to be asked about this, these never Trumpers. I mean, they were right there alongside George W. Bush when he signed that law. And now they're railing on Republicans over gun laws. And no one has asked them about that law, at least based on what I've seen. Thank you, Greg. Let's go next to Tony in Berkeley. Hi, Tony.
Hi. There's something that the media hasn't been reporting, and I haven't heard yet what the racial there's a racial aspect to this police response. Most of the victims I've seen everywhere are Latinx or Mexican American. How many of the Uvalde police on the scene were white police? How many Latinx police does that force have in the community? And finally, a very strong point on there is a solution to passing automatic weapons and military gun regulations in the United States, and that is electing new Congress members who will support bipartisan or who are not obstructionists or who are not under the dominance of the NRA and who are not against gun regulation. Nobody's taking away anybody's guns. We need to take military-style weapons off the streets. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. And again, just to reiterate, Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, said he will not support getting rid of the filibuster for this. And that means Democrats do not have 60 votes on universal background checks. So it won't go anywhere until they either get rid of the filibuster or water the bill down so much that they can get 10 Republicans on their side. What about the questions around race, Gabriel? A lot of people are talking about that on social media. Do you have any data for us or any information to share?
At this point, it's really all speculation. The fact is that Uvalde is a majority Latino town, and the police department, while it has many Latinos in it, is not representative of the population. Now, did that have anything to do with their decision to stand outside waiting around for an hour? I don't know. You can't look into people's hearts. But, you know, the juxtaposition of those two is certainly interesting.
Yeah. Anything to add, Jennifer?
Yes. I mean, there was a Twitter user this morning, you know, from Uvalde, who said, listen, I grew up here. And the attitude that police took in that school is exactly the attitude they take toward us all the time. They harass us and they don't help us. And I have a feeling if the racial composition in the town was different and those were white children, the response might have been a little more robust.
It's just Horrific. Thank you for that, Greg. We have an email from Kate who says, a few days ago, Morning Edition interviewed a Texas congressman about gun safety and common sense gun control measures. He pulled out the usual tropes and cliches. I was yelling at the radio at the host, ask the real question, ask the real question. Who owns you? Who pays for you to be in Congress? The media need to keep track of every penny the gun lobby donates, every penny legislators have invested in gun companies, and state those numbers over and over again. You know, it is so easy to find this information. And you're right. They should state this. The Brady campaign has a list. Mitt Romney has received $13.6 million from the gun lobby. Richard Burr, $6.9 million. Roy Blunt, $4.5 million. Marco Rubio, $3.3 million. Joni Ernst, $3.1 million. On this list, it is all Republicans. It is so easy to find. Gabriel, what about that? Just talk about this and bring in this information. It is not that difficult.
Gun owners and their indoctrination by the NRA have really warped our public debate about guns. You can hear it. You can hear Ted Cruz playing whack-a-mole. It's enragingly circular. Guns don't kill people. People kill people is a nice slogan if you want to take the focus off the shooter. And gun nuts want to make this about anything except guns, except the shooter, because they know the truth, which is that the public supports background checks, waiting periods, et cetera. They can't win the debate per se because the facts go against them. So not only do politicians like Ted Cruz play whack-a-mole, the NRA actively stymies research into gun violence to keep the public ignorant. And so we talk about guns as if they're a hypothetical rather than look at the evidence, which all of which shows that guns make no one safer.
Jennifer, anything to add?
I mean, yeah, it's become an argument where if you are even a gun owner and you argue for regulations, which I hear from a lot of gun owners, the argument it gets turned into by gun advocates and Republicans, you want to take away all of our guns. And that's a straw man argument. And the ATF has said many times, they chuckle because they don't have the budget to inspect gun stores. And, you know, they say, look, we don't have the manpower to take anything away. Nobody's going door to door. But that's an easy way to distract from what the real problem is, because then they'd have to fix it.
You know, we're almost out of time and I want to get to a few more calls. But first, I want to play a clip on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer in 1991. Former Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger, a conservative, said the idea that there was an individual right to bear arms was a fraud. Here's that clip.
If I were writing the Bill of Rights now, there wouldn't be any such thing as the Second Amendment.
Which says?
That a well-regulated militia being necessary for the defense of the state, that people's rights to bear arms. This has been the subject of one of the greatest pieces of fraud. I repeat the word fraud on the American public by special interest groups that I have ever seen in my lifetime. Now, just look at those words. There are only three lines to that amendment. A well-regulated militia. If the militia, which was going to be the state army, was going to be well-regulated, why shouldn't 16 and 17 and 18 or any other age persons be regulated in the use of arms the way an automobile is regulated?
1991, former Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger, a conservative, said the idea there was an individual right to bear arms was a fraud. Gabriel, I mean, that clip just shows you how far we have come in this conversation.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to look at the law, because while conservative justices are fine overturning precedent on Roe v. Wade so that states like Texas can terrorize women who want reproductive health care, precedent suddenly matters again when it comes to the Second Amendment. Even though we don't have or need a militia, we have an army, and the government has nuclear weapons. Whenever I hear a gun owner talking about how they're going to overthrow the government, it makes me chuckle, because rather than tearing down democracy, you know, we should be strengthening it to stop the military from turning on us rather than preparing for it. So because of the Second Amendment and because of the Supreme Court, even liberals are stuck calling for the bare minimum, background checks, waiting periods. What we really need to do, and lots of progressive liberals won't say this, but I do, is that we need to ban guns. And change the composition of the Supreme Court or repeal the Second Amendment. It does nothing but hurt us.
Jennifer, your final thoughts on how far this conversation has come?
Traditionally, for 200 plus years of jurisprudence, the Second Amendment was thought of as not an individual right. It was like a collective right, a pre-army, pre-militia thing we had on the books in the 18th century. In 2008, the decision, Heller versus the Heller decision in the Supreme Court, codified that we have an individual right to bear arms for self-defense. Until then, Berger's view was kind of the dominant view, at least in judicial circles.
Wow. Well, thank you both for your work and, you know, really important reporting that you put out there. Jennifer Macia is a news writer for The Trace, an independent newsroom dedicated to shining a light on the gun violence crisis in the United States. Gabriel Arana is editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer, a nonprofit known for its independent investigative reporting, and you can find their pieces at yourcallradio.org. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up next week, we're going to stay with our Monday One Planet show, but then we are going to talk about why it is so easy to buy guns in this country. What does it take to buy military-style weapons in the United States? What will it take to change that? We'll talk about how big this industry is, how much money they're making, and then we are going to talk about what it will take to reach the shooters. They have very different stories, as I said before, the Buffalo shooter and the Uvalde shooter, but we're going to talk about what it will take to reach them. And then we're also going to do shows about what gun laws look like in other countries, because this country, as we've been talking about, is completely on its own on this issue. If you have any show ideas or guest ideas, please email us yourcall@kalw.org. Huge thanks to Kevin Vance for grabbing today's clips and engineering the show. And it's been a really intense 2 weeks. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.